Thank you so much. So our next presenter is Lisa Searle. She is the chief of California Active Communities, which is a unit within the California Department of Public Health. And it creates opportunities for safe, everyday physical activity and active transportation through environmental and policy change. Lisa has promoted active living for Californians of all ages and all abilities for over 18 years. She's also past president of the National Physical Activity Society and certified physical activity and public health specialist. And she's going to speak to us about establishing safe routes to school policies in diverse rural settings.
Thank you, Libby. And I'd like to reiterate, those of you who have not joined the physical activity section with APHA, please do also look into becoming a member of the National Physical Activity Society and getting your certification from the American College of Sports Medicine and the National Physical Societies to become a physical activity and public health specialist. Thank you for that. I'd also like to say that I have no financial disclosures to report, and I'd like to acknowledge my colleagues here before I begin. I'm going to be talking about a specific program we did in California. Sue Watson with the Public Health Institute is here. Sue, please raise your hand. I also have our local leads from Solano County Public Health Department, Robin Cox, and from Tulare Public Health Department, Jose Ruiz-Salas. So thank you so much for being here. I am sandwiched between researchers, and I'm going to talk about an applied program we did, which I think is always exciting. I will give you a little background about California and why we were so well poised to start working in policy interventions for safe routes to school. In California in 1998, our physical activity unit and our state and local injury control unit came together to actually put out some monies locally to change the walking environment. We funded 16 counties. We got monies from our Office of Traffic Safety through our California Department of Transportation. We had great success in that endeavor, and we got funded again and came back a year later and asked 10 of those successful programs what they would like to focus on, and they said, let's do childhood pedestrian injuries and looking at how to decrease those. And through that, one of the counties that was funded, Marin County, actually laid the groundwork and started the Safe Routes to School program there, started the Safe Routes to School movement nationally. And I want to call out Wendy Callens and Deb Hubsmith in California who did that. And Deb Hubsmith later went on to found the National Safe Routes to School Partnership. Then we had our colleagues in the advocacy world with our ped and bike advocates working to get legislation passed, and in 99-2000 we actually had monies dedicated for safe routes to school from our state. That was primarily with engineering, but there was some non-infrastructure education, encouragement, enforcement that was done. And then of course with the passage of funding from the feds for transportation, all of the states got safe routes to school funding. In California, we are extremely diverse, and I know a lot of people think of California as just this big concrete jungle, very urban, but that is so far not the case. We have over 37 million inhabitants, and 80% of our lands are rural. And the diversity in California is immense. I can just give you a little snippet of Sacramento, California, where I'm from. There's a suburb there called Elk Grove. When it is completely built out, their school district will be the second in the state to Los Angeles, and already we have 46 different languages spoken in those elementary schools. So that's just one little snippet there for you. So we're very, very diverse. And safe routes to school looks extremely different in every community and very, very different in our rural communities. As I said, we've been working in safe routes to school for quite some time, but mainly in the urban or suburban areas. So we were given an opportunity that we just latched onto. The Public Health Institute had put in for a grant for the CDC for the Community Transformation Grants, and we were lucky enough in California to get that for statewide grant, and the Public Health Institute partnered with the California Department of Public Health so that we could provide technical assistance directly. But California also was successful in 7 of our counties and 1 tribe getting direct funding. So what we did for CA for Health is what we called our Community Transformation Grant. We were able to go very deep in 12 rural counties that had not had much attention or resources to work on policy change around safe routes to school. But we also extended our technical assistance and training efforts to the rest of those counties that didn't receive funding, and even those larger counties that did. So we worked in those counties where they had less than $500,000 to implement this work. And safe routes to school, you know, it's all about, as I said, it's really safe routes to everywhere for everyone. We have to institutionalize the ped and bike policies in the schools and the schools districts, but also in our local governments, in the small jurisdictions, in unincorporated areas, and of course address any of the challenges and barriers to make sure that people can safely walk and bike, not just to school, but throughout their neighborhood to a lot of their critical destinations and social services. A lot of challenges to overcome, and this is in the rural communities as well as all of the other communities, is of course distance. We have high speeds. Vehicular speeds are insane in some of our rural counties. You know, many of their main streets are actual highways, and we have to slow that traffic. Of course, there's unsafe crossings, not enough infrastructure. Then there's the personal safety fears, the real, and I don't even like to say perceived, because they're real to these people, whether they're perceived or not. It's happening. And, of course, in some of our communities, we have a lot of parents who can't be involved because they're having to go at work to work maybe at 5 a.m. or do double shifts and just can't be at school to help out. And then, of course, the budget constraints that we have in California and throughout this nation, and competing priorities, cuts to our school busing, et cetera, et cetera. And we know, I mean, how many of us walked to school when we were kids, or you're, you know, okay, nobody's raising their hand. I certainly did. Okay, but how many of you now let your children do that, or your grandchildren? Yeah, nil. Nobody's raising their hand for those of us who are hearing the recording. So that's a significant problem. And, of course, safe routes to school, it's to increase PA, make sure our walking conditions are safe, and of course looking at our environment and reducing poor air quality and decreasing vehicle emissions traveled. We want to get kids walking where it's safe, where it's not, we want to make it safe. And for those of you who aren't familiar with safe routes to school, there's components, there's infrastructure, which is engineering, changing the streetscape, and then there's the non-infrastructure components, which are education, encouragement, enforcement, and that's what I'm going to be focusing on for the remainder of this presentation. And of course, any good program has to have evaluation, whether you're doing infrastructure or non-infrastructure. And the ideal in an urban or suburban setting is this. This is a great streetscape here with your pedestrian refuge and all of the proper signage and the greenery, as was talked about previously. But what we're looking at in a rural environment, probably the reality is this would be a luxury if we could even have a paved path that is connected through different towns. Education, encouragement, enforcement are really, you know, the key. You have to have that groundwork programmatically before you can really start talking about policies. And there's a lot of systems change to support that. We love our walk and bike to school events because that serves as a catalyst to bring all the key stakeholders together to get the public and the decision makers interested in looking at making changes to walking and biking. And then all of the things that go along with that throughout the school year to instill these kinds of practices. But then we need the policies in place to make sure these programmatic efforts continue. So in rural areas, what do our strategies look like? Well, there's many that parallel our urban and suburban areas, but we have to look at remote drop-off sites for school buses, because a lot of our rural areas, you just can't ever get kids to safely walk and bike. They're coming from long distances, the streetscape, very narrow, windy roads. that don't have any even shoulders perhaps for these children to walk, and no possibility of buying easements for them to be able to have safe sidewalks. So we want to establish some remote drop-off locations at a safe area, whether that be a park or a church or a grocery store parking lot, and give all of these children a chance to be able to be escorted and walked in maybe a half mile away from their school. Also looking at walking opportunities before and after school, or even during school, during the lunch period. Embedding walking or biking education or actual hands-on efforts with the PE time, and then making safer routes to bus stops. So for those rural students, they at least can walk to their bus stop and get some activity prior to school. And then looking at the ordinance changes, like I said, maybe there's a potential to put get an easement to actually increase the streetscape for walking and biking, but decreasing those vehicular speeds so that children who are walking and biking are gonna be safe. And then, of course, there's carpooling that we can have our locals do, and then in the rural areas they can use the remote drop-offs to walk in again. There's so many policies that can support safe routes to school, and as I said, this isn't just for safe routes to school. These are policies that are going to help all of your residents in your communities to get them walking and biking. Many of these can be done over time. Many take, you know, a quick fix, maybe a school bond, and you're going to get some monies to help with this. School wellness policies, joint use agreements, complete streets effort, these all help the majority of people being able to walk and bike. In California, for the California for Health implementation side of it, we really worked with our local county public health departments. We not only gave them funding, but we gave them the opportunity to establish content expertise around active transportation and safe routes to school within their public health department, which many of them did not have. They had never worked on these issues before. And they were able to build a cadre of champions, develop task forces to do some of these policies and practices, and they engaged their communities. We worked with all the key stakeholders: public works, transportation planning, traffic engineers, law enforcement, emergency services, the COGS, elected officials, businesses, et cetera, and the school districts. We engaged the superintendents. We engaged the PTA, the parents, any of the residents surrounding the school, reached out to the school boards. And what worked, a lot worked. We were able to have our local county public health departments foster novel partnerships. Many of our public health departments did not have relationships with any of these partners to begin with, and they were not looked upon as leaders for this kind of work. So they developed these partnerships, and they continue to this day to sustain and actually nurture and expand the partnerships. They were able to clarify policy and focus on what was important for their particular neighborhood, community, or township. And the task forces moved past just looking at construction and getting money for that, and really looked at initiating programs to sustain the policies. And technical assistance was provided, as I said, through our department and the Public Health Institute to really help nurture those local public health departments and their partners throughout the way, which I think, you know, was a critical need. And then planning ahead, we kept giving one-on-one coaching and intense technical assistance so that they could be successful. There were some significant challenges, as there always is in new programming. It was really going beyond programs, because in public health we're so used to doing the programmatic, and for some, it was a little outside of their comfort zone to think about the policy and environmental change. But once they were able to embrace that, and it took us a good year, year and a half, for some of our counties to really latch on to this, and this was to be a five-year project, and CDC got cut, so the funding only allowed us to go for 3 years. So we did, you know, still accomplish a lot in the limited amount of time we had. But shifting them to that, to looking at policy, and then the politics of our decision makers. I mean, we were dealing with some very conservative counties. We had one county that still does want to secede from California. So we had some issues there. And they had to jump through a lot of hoops, our program leads, to make sure that this work could move forward. And then the external decision makers, you know, the monies that where it came from was a little problematic for some of them who were extremely conservative. So we had to get past that as well. And we eventually did in every county. Our counties were successful and they continue to walk and roll. The success stories and the storytelling we captured, and they're available through the Public Health Institute website for CA for Health. And I encourage you to look up that. It was very heartwarming to see how much was done and how much attention and support this got locally. Here's what actually happened in our 12 counties. This is really the meat of it. So they were able to do a significant amount. Counties were able to, not all of them did all of these. One or two did, you know, did some of these. Some were only able to successfully accomplish one. But we had embedded Safe Routes to School language in our school wellness policies or our school district policies. The schools also established in the student and parent handbooks for the beginning of school Safe Routes to School policies, as well as maps and arrival and dismissal times, no idling policies, so that parents didn't just sit in their car and increase air pollution. We also had an implementation of a crossing guard program. We had one community that had already done a lot of Safe Routes to School work in the past. So they focused on a community college that needed to have a bike and ped plan because there was just no way to egress or exit that community college. We also had a rural area where they chose to actually have a trail plan implemented so they could connect three of their towns, and particularly the township in the middle that had the high school, through a trail. And that trail actually crossed tribal lands as well. So there was a lot of work that had to be done with the tribes to make sure that that happened. And it's still ongoing. It isn't complete, but it will be so. We also had many of our counties develop countywide Safe Routes to School plans. And this is where they worked with the local jurisdictions and the transportation and land use planners to make sure that these plans were successful and implemented. In California, we have a legislation called AB 321, and that actually allows cities to decrease their school zone speeds to 15 miles an hour. And so many are starting to do that work, and we did have a county who worked on that as part of this project. We also were able to embed Safe Routes to School language in general plans, master plans, mobility and circulation plans, and then here's a lovely success story. We had our public health staff connect with the community development department and give them that language for a mobility plan that otherwise would have never gotten in there. So those are just a few examples of the great work we had. We had 19 policies overall, and again, I said we were cut short 2 years, so I was very confident that we would have even doubled that if we were able to have gone 5 years. We had health in all policies in all of our approaches, and our public health staff were looked at as not only conveners but leaders in the arena now. They got these strong partnerships. They're continuing to nurture them. We had community events that support this work. We had school events that continue to support this work, and these policies are instituted. And the nice thing is opportunities moving forward. In California, we had a lot of our counties were successful in acquiring what we call active transportation program grants, what the rest of the country calls the alternative transportation program funding. And again, they're leveraging some of those resources through other funding sources in their department to continue this work. And then these best practice and policies are moving forward, and everybody is now understand the importance of the two-pronged approach to have program and to have policy to support each other. And lastly, we at our department have funding from our Department of Transportation, State Department of Transportation, to continue a Safe Routes to School Technical Assistance Resource Center, which we've been housing for over 5 years now, and that will help all of our counties throughout California to continue this work. With that, I thank you for your time and look forward to questions after the presentations.
Thank you.